welcome on back to another episode of Culinary Road. I'm your host, Justin Melnick, alongside Fred Mullins. Fred, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How you folks? How's everybody out there?
I think they're good. I'm just going to assume.
I know, I can't hear them. That was a dumb question.
All right, so another week, another show. Here we go. So we have our top three, which is our now world famous. Well, we have listeners in Italy, my cousins out there. My wife's cousins, I should say, but I pretend.
Okay, that counts, though. That's part of the world. So
That would officially, just because Giacomo and Federico listened to us, we are now international podcast.
Holy cow, look at that.
So world famous, top three.
Yeah, so this is something you dreamed up, which I love. So it's my turn this week to pick the subject. And I'm halfway regretting what I'm picking, but I'm just going to roll with it. Are you ready?
I'm ready. What do we got? Top three this week is?
Top three guilty pleasure foods.
Top three guilty pleasure foods.
You're kind of embarrassed that you like them. And you probably won't eat them in front of people willingly.
Right.
Unless you've had a lot to drink. That's kind of how I define it.
Sure, yeah.
Not necessarily a dark secret, just not something you're necessarily proud of. You know, like if you had a mullet when you were younger, growing up in the 80s, Billy Squire t-shirt, something of that nature, you may not like flaunt it. And if you can find that picture, you're probably going to throw it away. So that's kind of where this...
Or at least put it like in the back of the drawer or something like that, right?
But you can't help yourself because it's good.
Yeah.
So that's where this... That's the idea.
All right, so top three guilty pleasures with food. Let's re-emphasize that.
Food. Very clear. Food.
Your topic, my choice. I get to go first, right?
You go first, yep.
All right, so I had, years ago when I was actually the chef at Tommaso, I had an interview that they asked me the same question. Your top three guilty, or your number one. I didn't have top three. I didn't get to choose two more after this. But it was your number one guilty pleasure with food. I'm going to just reiterate what I said back then. It was buffalo tenders with way too much blue cheese. But so, I mean, just the boneless buffalo tenders, not the wings, because I don't like to get my hands too dirty when I'm eating. I like to get my hands dirty when I'm working, but when I'm eating, I'm like, maybe I'll just have like a fork and a knife.
This is fascinating, but I can see why you like it. Now, how far did this go back with you?
It goes back some years.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Probably to my, you know, teenage years anyway.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, a while.
But I would absolutely have way too much blue cheese dressing on top of the buffalo tenders and just like dip it in another cup of blue cheese. And that was, which isn't, you know, that's one of those things that I enjoy the hell out of it. I try not to eat. I don't really eat in front of too many people anyway.
Well, you don't get a chance to.
Yeah, I don't get a chance to. And it's just one of those things. I don't know. Most of my meals are standing over a trash can in the kitchen, or you know, standing in front of my refrigerator at the end of the night when I get home at midnight or whatever.
You're so hungry you can't see straight, and you got like, you just need to eat.
Yeah, just throw a hot dog in the microwave and go. So I would say my number one, I always go buffalo. Like anytime.
Okay.
Like, what do you want for pizza tonight? Give me a buffalo chicken pizza. What do you want? You know, give me some buffalo wings.
Right. Okay. So this has a bit of a broad reach.
There's a little more of a stretch there, or reach there than
okay. Than I like this.
I think, but it has to have good blue cheese dressing, and you have to put too much blue cheese on there.
It's funny. I like blue cheese in very small amounts, but when I have buffalo wings, I almost never touch blue cheese. Here's the sacrilege. I actually prefer ranch. In my setting with that.
Yeah, well, I live, again, for those of you that have listened to the show before, you know that I live in Western Pennsylvania, and ranch basically runs through the people in this area's veins.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ranch, they sell ranch with their pizza on the side. Everybody puts all their pizza in ranch here. Ranch is literally like religion around here.
Wow. Okay. So, didn't know that.
Yeah. So I go the opposite. I try to go.
The blue cheese is good.
I try to go the blue cheese so that I don't have the Western Pennsylvania ranch running through my veins. I still have to keep to my New Hampshire roots a little bit.
You got to keep it real, man.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so that's my number one pick. What do you got?
It's a takeout. Okay. And I understand that it's not really Chinese food. I'm painfully aware of that, and I don't care. I love General Tso's chicken.
Oh, yeah.
I love it so much. It's funny. We both picked chicken. It couldn't be less Chinese if it tried, and I just don't care. Mm. I could eat four people's portions of it. It's my favorite, favorite takeout. And I know I'm supposed to be into like the authentic Szechuan and stuff, and that's really good.
Nah, you're not supposed to be into that stuff.
I love it, but
you're into whatever you're into.
When Chinese takeout, it's either that or lo mein, but this blows lo mein away. So General Tso's chicken, that's like, love it.
Yeah, my
favorite takeout food.
When I go Chinese takeout, the crab rangoon are
not so bad. Or the poo-poo platter, right? You get a little bit of everything.
Yeah, but no, the crab rangoon specific.
Got it. Okay, well, it's fried with cream cheese and crab in the middle.
Right, exactly. So that's
a crab dip that's been conveniently packaged for you
in a deep fried package.
You forgot about the deep fried part. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, that's Chinese takeout just in general.
Right.
And it's not Chinese. It's not.
I know it's not Chinese.
Chinese food at all. But
I know they made it just for the Americans, and God bless them. Thank you.
Yes. So I didn't mean to impede on your Chinese takeout with my Chinese.
No. No, that's the whole idea. This is a little bit of give and take.
Well, you also know that every time we do a top three, I end up doing four or five of them. I like sneak in some other.
Yeah, but you like to label them as A, B, and C, which we know.
Or honorary mention, or there's all kinds of names.
If you know, man, I stick to the rules. I hard stop at three.
Yeah, no, not me.
Rules.
That doesn't even count. That's not even my number two
picks this week, buddy.
I just put that one in there. That's not even my pick. I just piggybacked on yours.
Yeah. Well, let's get on to your real number two.
My number two pick is cold meatballs.
That's nothing to be ashamed of.
I usually am. So I get home from work.
Yeah.
I usually throw all my clothes, my chef coat, my, chef pants, all that kind of stuff.
The unitard. Yep,
everything I have on me. Yes, my unitard, all that good stuff.
I got it. Yeah.
Spandex, all that. And I throw it all right in the washing machine. And then I start the load. And then my laundry room is right next to the kitchen. So usually I'm standing in my boxer briefs. And I just go straight to the kitchen. And I open the refrigerator. And whatever's in there, I'll start eating it cold. Because, again, I'm getting home late.
And you're starving. Yeah.
And I've been cooking all day. The last thing I want to do is start cooking again.
Yeah.
And when I've made meatballs or polpette on Sunday or Monday, and then it's, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and they're still in there, I will just pluck them out of the sauce with my fingers, stand in front of the open refrigerator. I don't like bring them to the couch or on the table.
You eat in shame right in the refrigerator.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just standing in boxer briefs, open refrigerator, cold meatballs right out of my hand, right into my mouth. And fucking love it.
It's like cold pizza. Come on. I don't know if that's a guilty pleasure. I mean, pizza's better hot, but it's really good cold. I think maybe if you had them for breakfast, you could feel slightly more shameful, but.
That also happens at breakfast too.
Yeah, right.
Just the cold. I prefer most of my meals I end up eating cold because I don't have the time or the energy at the end of the night to reheat them. So, the cold.
I'm on board. By the way, I've been on board with both of your picks. I'm totally on board with them. The boneless part of the chicken tenders, but I get it. It's less work, but I've been on board with them.
All right. Well, what do you got?
I'm still saying you're hitting the category right because of the how you're eating them. I think
right. It's all about painting the picture of the whole process of eating it. Just eating.
It's not just the food. It's the experience. It's not just the food. It's right. How it's being handled. Let's say. Yeah.
Right. Just eating a cold meatball is one thing. Eating a cold meatball in front of an open refrigerator in your boxer briefs at midnight. That's a whole different ball.
That's game. Living, man. That's living.
Doesn't get better than that, does it?
Oh, God. I almost feel bad. All right, number two, tater tots.
Tater tots. All right, what's nothing wrong with that?
I love them so much. They're so. They're like better. They're like hash browns, but there's more fried potato.
Right.
And it's the more ketchup, the better, man. I'm just all on board with tater tots. I've never had a tater tot that I haven't liked. Ice cold because it's been sitting out for an hour. So hot that you can't really bite it and you can't taste it. I love tater tots. I love them. I would eat them almost for every meal if I could. I love them that much.
You almost sound like Sam I Am with the...
I would eat them on a train. I would eat them on a plane. I could eat them here or there. I would eat them anywhere.
But I, when you said tater tots, I was like, well, I mean, that's a pretty normal pick. And then the amount of passion that came out, and I could see it. You can't see it during the podcast, but I could see it in your eyes because we're looking at each other on Zoom.
Yeah.
And the passion that you brought into when you said tater tots, it was like a love affair.
I pushed a child out of the way to get my share of tater tots. Do you know what I mean? I love those things so much. They're so good. Yeah. I like French fries, but better. And I love French fries. So tater tots.
All right.
Take your pick. It doesn't matter. Just get your tater tots on. All right. So that leads you. That was my number two. So you're number three.
All right. So my number three, guilty pleasure. And I think I obviously have a theme here with things that I typically end up eating when I get home from work late at night.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
That's kind of, you know, that's where all the guilty things happen.
Yep.
Well, nobody's looking. Just with food. But microwaved nachos.
Oh, nacho. Yep.
So I get a paper plate.
It has to be a paper plate.
With like two or three. It has to be a paper plate.
Please tell me it's Velveeta. Is it Velveeta?
It'll get to Velveeta.
Okay.
I cover with two or three layers of tortilla chips. You know, usually the off-brand.
Whatever tortilla chips you got. I got it.
Yep, they're all the same, right? Layer it on there and then put on whatever cheese you got. Sometimes it's the shredded, you know, taco cheese blend. Sometimes
The little handy pack.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just the jar of like the cheese queso con salsa kind of thing.
Yeah.
Dump that on top, microwave the shit out of it until it's all completely melted. And then I pull it out of the microwave. Again, this is at midnight.
Eating in my boxers.
And in my boxers, not to paint too much of a picture, but yes, most of the time. And then I'll pour the salsa over the top and I'll put some fresh sliced jalapenos on there and I'll do the sour cream and then I'll just go to town. And you don't want to watch that.
It's hard to beat a good plate of nachos.
It's not a good plate of nachos. It's a plate of nachos.
Hang on. Have you ever had a bad plate of nachos? No. You haven't.
No.
That's my point. No, you haven't.
But I've also had much better plates of nachos than the ones that I throw in the microwave in my box at midnight.
Well, there's nachos that'll make you really happy. Then there's really, really good nachos that just make you ridiculously happy.
Right, right.
But it's a little, it's almost like pizza, except there are some exceptions. Even when it's bad, it's still pretty good. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
So go nachos. I like that. It was a good pick.
Yeah. So that rounds out my top three. Buffalo tenders, cold meatballs, and microwave nachos, and they all happen.
They all happen in your boxer shorts after midnight.
In front of the open refrigerator.
Well, my last one kind of can fit into that category. It's a habit I picked up when I was in school and I was working a couple of jobs and getting home super late, and I carry on the tradition to this day, because sometimes I do a ton of driving. The past year has been a little different, but sometimes I'll get home at like 1 or 2 in the morning, and like you, I'm like, I am not making a thing to eat. I'm starving. I need to grab something right now. So here we go. I'm going to admit it.
You seem embarrassed by this one already.
Peanut butter Cap'n Crunch right out of the box.
Peanut butter Cap'n Crunch right out of the box.
I love peanut butter Cap'n Crunch. It's
so you're so just good. Like eating it by the handful.
I'm just eating it by the handfuls, watching probably Bob's Burgers or whatever, Rick and Morty. Like I'm still in my 20s. And like it can't give me diabetes by eating the whole box kind of thing. But right. I love peanut butter Cap'n Crunch.
When you first said that, I thought you were going to say that you had a spoonful of peanut butter and you dipped it into the box.
No, you're ruining the whole experience. You need to cut the roof of your mouth up a little bit. And yeah, I know they're the balls instead of like the weird square pieces, but they rip the inside of your mouth to pieces. But I just love peanut butter Cap'n Crunch. So I think all of my picks were from when I was 5, except for maybe General Tso's chicken. But let's be honest, it's fried chicken with something kind of sweet, sticky, and spicy on it. So
right. Well, to be fair, all of my
haven't matured very much.
All of my picks basically fall into a 5-year-old's
the boxer short category. The foods are appropriate to eat in your boxer shorts. I would not go with nachos. A lot of things can go wrong. I'll leave it at that. All right,
well, that wraps up the top three this week. Great category, great topic. I guess it's my turn next week, but I'll have a week to think about it. So
Yep. All right,
well, that brings us to the next segment, which is our interview with Leon Bisco.
We have a guest.
Leon is currently the executive chef at an executive chef at Restaurant Associates. And he also has a food truck on Cape Cod, based out of Sandwich, but they're all over the Cape. 5-star ribs. Leon was a line cook at Tommaso. We brought him on, you know, back in the day. And then the original chef left, and I took over for Tony. Leon ended up going with Tony to open up his new space. And then eventually Leon ended up coming back, and he was my sous chef for a little while. And, you know, he's just such a passionate guy, just cares so much about learning and honing his skills and really kind of taking things to the next level. As humble as can be, never has any issue with, you know, looking like he doesn't know something, because if you don't know something, frankly, you should try to learn it. And he's always been really great about that. Genuinely good guy.
A good character, a constant student, and I mean that in a very good way. That's meant as a compliment. His curiosity kind of has taken him a lot further, because he wants to learn, wants to get better, wants to perfect, wants to know, like, well, you mentioned 5-star ribs. That was all about smoking, you know, meat, smoking foods. He got really into that and is trying to perfect it. And then he had a trip to Japan some years back, and that really sparked his real love and his real passion, which is basically Japanese cuisine, which specifically zeroes in, I feel like, from the way he's described it, sushi. You know, right. The broad spectrum of sushi that there is, which we will get into. Yeah.
Yeah, but that kind of ties into his quest for knowledge and the idea of trying to perfect something and trying to learn all the different nuances. And you can't get any more simple conceptually than sushi. I mean, at the end of the day, it's rice and raw fish, right? I mean, it doesn't get any more simple than that. But
however,
the complexity of those ingredients, what it takes to make the rice the way that needs to be made, what it takes to source the fish, how to cut it, the right knife to use, the years of training that it takes to do all these things properly, it's just on a whole different level than many other cuisines.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people listening to this, if you have that reaction like, oh, come on, it's cutting fish, trust us, you're hearing it from a chef who's a professionally trained chef from the CIA telling you how difficult it is to do it properly. When you've had really great sushi, you remember it. When you've had sushi, you call it sushi, if you know what I mean. It takes a tremendous amount of skill, focus, and passion to be able to pull off a plate that simple. Simple food is probably harder to get right than having tons of ingredients and layers of flavor and all kinds of different things on the plate. When you've got two things on there, they both have to be, well, stellar. If you don't do it just right, there you go.
It has to be pristine. And, you know, any impurities are going to be glaring.
Yep.
You know, you're going to be able to see those things very, very easily. So, you know, that simplicity is very difficult to perfect. And the Japanese culture is all about trying to perfect things. And, you know, like you mentioned, Leon was able to go on a trip out there. Leon's not a Japanese chef. He's not a sushi chef. He was just through Restaurant Associates, he was able to go on this amazing trip out there, and it really sparked his interest in that. But, you know, he's also, he saw somebody who was smoking chicken wings one time, and then he got really passionate about this, you know, smoking process, and got into this 5-star ribs food truck that he started. And when he was working with me, we started learning about making fresh pasta, and he was just like all entrenched in learning about making fresh pasta. And yeah, whatever it is, he's just like,
he's all in, right?
Yeah, he's all in. That's yeah, the best way to put it. So
without any more prolonged rambling from the two of us, right?
I guess get right into the interview with Leon Bisco.
Yeah, here comes Leon.
Okay, welcome to the show, Leon Bisco. Leon, welcome, man. It's great to have you. It's been a long time. I mean, we haven't caught up in too many years, but you know, we're excited to have you on the show. Definitely this week. This is left turn, like we talk about every once in a while, but this is like a hard left turn from what we normally talk about. We're not in the same country. We're not in the same genre of anything. So, but we're happy to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. And yeah, we're definitely, that explains me to a T. Left turn.
Yeah, so we're the sort of idea is every time the guest brings a different beverage and a different food item to the show. Like I said, we're taking a little hard left turn here. We're going to Japan. So, you know, Fred and I tend to lean heavily on Italy, but we're gonna go into our beverage of choice, which is sake today. So, which is something that I'm not all that familiar with. I know Fred knows much more than I do, and I think you probably consumed it way more than both of us.
Leon, I got to tell you, when I saw the questionnaire, I was stoked. You know, I think it's sort of, and there's really no way of running out of wine on a wine list, but some of us wine professionals feel like we get to the end of the road, and all of a sudden it's like, ooh, sake. It's like this whole kind of almost like undiscovered thing, and I'm hoping you can shed some light on a sake for people, because, you know, there's it's so varied, like wine or even like beer, and it straddles in between, even though the way to get to the sake is a little bit more like the beer process and less like the wine process. It behaves like wine, but you kind of make it like beer. It's just, to me, it's super fascinating, and I think I'm gonna let you fill in all the gaps, because I prefer to be a student this week. And if I can add something valuable, I will. Otherwise, I might keep my mouth shut the whole time.
Right. I'm going to cut you off real quick before we jump into Leon, because I think you know more about what sake is for our listeners that maybe don't know what it is at all. Maybe they've never had it, but maybe just give the broad strokes of what it is, and then Leon can go a little more in depth with which one he chose and why.
Yeah. So it's, I think a lot of people think of it like a wine, and technically it is, but it's almost more like an eau de vie or a spirit, the way it's processed. It's essentially cooked. But the most important thing to remember is, and this is not to talk down to anybody listening, it's actually made from rice. A lot of people aren't necessarily aware that sake comes from rice. So it's a grain like you would, you know, like beer is. You get barley and malt together and you make beer and hops, of course. But sake is typically rice that's been polished in the polishing technique. But basically they, in a way, grind down the rice to a certain amount. They'll get light at 10, 20, 30, 40%, sometimes as much as 60% to get to what they feel is the best core or the best part of the rice. And they make the sake from that by steaming it, putting a little lactic acid in there, which helps induce the fermentation. And then you basically get what's left over. All that liquid becomes sake. Then it's typically aged for a few months to sometimes a few years. And that's where it becomes a little bit more like wine. There's a lot of different ways to get there, but it is a rice-based drink, a little stronger than wine, not quite as strong as a spirit, although there's some exceptions to it. It's delightful with food. It's really good on its own. And I think arguably more flexible than beer or wine, because you can drink it. There's hot sake, which is kind of not real familiar here in the States, but I think a lot of people are more familiar with that, to ones that are actually sparkling. You can drink them ice cold to room temperature. They tend to be really flexible in that fashion. And I feel like that's about as far as I can take it without putting both of my feet in my mouth. And I'm going to let
perfect.
Who we invited on the show talk about it further. And if I'm wrong, Leon, feel free to embarrass me right now, because I'm totally cool with that.
Leon, before you get into it, let's have a cheers. Because
the toast.
We're too far into the show without drinking. Not that we weren't drinking before, but.
Gunpai is cheers.
Gunpai. Gunpai.
Gunpai.
Gunpai.
Yes.
That's delightful. Yep. That's good.
So, no, Fred, you really hit it spot on with your explanation. And what I chose tonight is the, ironically, you said it's brewed different ways, but I have the Hiwa Shozu. So this is brewed more, like you said, more in the spirit fashion Shozu is, which is very close to sake, but it's a little bit stronger. But again, this is super great cold, great with, it pairs with everything. But tonight I did it with the salmon sashimi with a really vibrant yuzu cucumber water. And it was excellent. And it's just really, when I went to Japan, we had it with everything. Like you said, it runs the gamut. They serve it sparkling, it's regular sake, and we had the shozu, and it's just really delicious. And then when I went to Japan, then to see the fields, I released the ducklings into the field, and I questioned, like, why the ducklings into these organic rice fields. And the ducklings help the rice seedlings grow. They eat the insects, you know, get in the way. That's really, and the weeds as well. It's really backbreaking work to clean the fields. And these the little ducklings, they do everything for it. And besides the fertilizer part aspect, but the farmer really relies on these ducklings to even keep the rows straight. And
I knew I loved ducks. It's one of my favorite things to eat, and they're adorable. I didn't know that. This is fascinating. Very but cool.
The paddling movement too, because you know the duck always looks so like calm on the water, but like underneath they're like scrambling. But that movement really stimulates the plant growth, and it just, and again, fertilizes the soil, and the ducklings really help in that organic process. But it was just amazing to be in the fields of Japan, you know, releasing the ducklings, just feeling the warm air, drinking, eating everything. And just, it was a really trip of a lifetime, really just so many memorable experiences that they squeezed into the 10 days.
Yeah, that's amazing. Can we go back when you're talking about shozu, can you walk us through like we'll call it the more basic version of sake all the way through to what you're drinking, just so people kind of understand the tiers or the different versions of it? Just to make it clear for them.
We did a sake tasting. We did the different stages. We were there for, you know, we did our stages, but then also in between the stages, we got to go to these little like field trips throughout the day. And we did a sake tasting. And you're right, Fred, they runs the gamut. Like it starts with something like a simple wine, like a table wine. It would be a table sake, light, you know, still delicious. But then it goes all the way up to, I had one that was a deep golden color, and it was the aged in the barrels, and it just really like a special sake. And I actually ended up buying that one. I bought 3 bottles actually.
Yeah, that's how they get you. They have you taste all day, then they give you the most expensive one last. So it's a great technique.
Yeah, no, I kind of
as the wine salesman.
I kind of bought every tier because I went to but it was amazing. But you're right. It's treated just like wine. Like you said, there would be like a Grand Cru version and a simple table one, and then the middle of the road. But they're really particular about their water and their rice. Like, for example, the one I'm drinking, it's a Yamadan Shiki rice, and it's a special Koyasan Nanzu water. And the alcohol is actually 15%. So it's, you know, a little bit higher than normal, but the water is super special. They took us to a place where the water comes down from the mountain, and you could see the people just with their jugs gathering it, because it was flowing just naturally, and they were just filling up their water bottles. But that's the same water they use to make the sake, but it's like sacred water.
Oh, I get that. When you put sake on there, I remember water being a really big part of it, because it makes perfect sense when you think about that. But the different levels and minerals found in the water, wherever they're making the sake, influences how it's going to ferment, which will alter how it tastes, you know. And I think that's a really cool part of it, because when you think about, and we've talked about wine a bit, beer again, it falls in more of the category of how you basically make it to get to the end product, like sake. With wine, you press the grapes and you're like, that's the vintage. You know what I mean? Here, you know, like we're going to use this water because we know it's really good for the rice, and we'll get this out of it. Not that it tastes the same every time, but there's more consistency, and that's why it's good, because of the water they're using, not only the rice and the process. But I, you know, it's funny, that's those little things. It's a little bit like, what was that famous, oh, you know, our pizza crust in Napoli is different because of the water. And there was some restaurateur in New York that tried to ship the water over and emulate it. That's part of it, but not really. But the bacteria and everything react differently because the water has different structure, just like everything else. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So when we're talking about which, you know, which sake to choose and everything, when Fred and I got on here as we were prepping for the show, I held up my bottle of sake that we were, that I just randomly picked out. I don't know much about sake. I've had it a bunch of times, usually when I'm way too deep into drinking to even know what I had. But I was, you know, I was sober when I went to the store today, and I was looking through all, and you know, this is a small selection. There's not a ton of things to choose from, but I was looking and I just kind of, you know, was scanning through, and I picked this one bottle called Taiku, T-Y-K-U. And, you know, I was showing Fred, I'm like, yeah, this is what I got for the show. And then lo and behold, Fred, what did you pick?
I got the same exact bottle. It was kind of coincidental because Chef and I really try not to talk to each other too much about what we're getting. Now, we've had a few guests on that sent us what they specifically wanted us to talk about, so we kind of knew ahead of time. But it's a little bit of the fun element here is like, it's like, ah, surprise, I'm drinking this one, I'm drinking that one. This is a total coincidence, but yeah.
So let's transition from the sake. So the sake that we chose today was basically to lead us to one of your true passions that we've really honed down this technique, which is sushi. So there's, again, the American palate, which we talk about a lot with Italian food, and we've talked about it with the Portuguese and, you know, all these different things. But sushi, as we know it here, is a lot different than how they do it actually in Japan. So why don't you get into a little bit about the sushi and, you know, why you chose it and what you made, and we'll get into some more detail about.
Well, yeah, it was your trip, right, Leon? I mean, you went there, like, how long ago was that trip?
It was amazing. I was put up from restaurant associates in my company in front of the Gohan Society in Japan. And Sori-san, she's in charge of it. She's actually the owner of Korin Knife Company. So she, way back when she came, when she was in New York trying to kind of give her knives to these chefs. And it was hard at first. You know how chefs are. You go into their kitchen, they're like, get out. But
territorial.
Yeah, she stuck with it, and she is the owner of Korin Knife Company. But she also does this side thing where she just wants to create a cultural bridge between the Japanese chefs and the American chefs, and just for an understanding. So she created this kind of like program where she takes a handful of chefs from the USA to Japan for 10 days. It's 2 days added, you know, like a day travel, but 10 days on the land. And then she also does the same for the Japanese chefs. They come over here and do the same program. So it's just fascinating. It's so just structured, like, so they squeeze so much into those 10 days. It's mind-boggling, and you're spinning, you almost like you're constantly doing something. It's just you learn so much. You're cooking with the chefs, and where we were eating all these restaurants, and one thing I realized was I always thought as a chef, even that the fish would be the most important part of the sushi, you know, but I learned for them, that's why I chose sake, because rice is the key. So at the rice, it takes 10 years for a person to master, to become a sushi chef. So 10 years, Fred and Justin, yeah. You're there working next to the chef. Just to, you can't even touch the fish, but just to learn how to do the rice, and then to maybe work yourself onto the line. But the dedication is incredible. That's one thing I really learned. They're masters of their craft. You know, they master one thing. So it could be rice, it could be noodles. What, you know, they just do that one thing. So of course you're going to obsess about it. This one guy blindfolds himself, because he said when he's doing the noodles that his eyes lied to him. He goes, my eyes lied to him. So he blindfolds himself. He does the noodles with just his senses, because he says he feels more with his senses than his eyes. So that's nuts. Right there, that gives me chills. Like, right. They're like complete masters of their craft. And, you know, someone might say, oh, I would get bored, but I get excited to think like that. Like, you can tell with like humid, like bread making, you know, okay, it's humid today, I need to adjust something. I think that's exciting. That, like, that drives me, where you become so in tune with something that you know that the humidity in the air is going to throw something off. But that's how they are. Like, again, they took us everywhere. Sorry, I'm getting a little bit tangential here, but they showed us the woodworking, you know, and everything, like in these little field trips, like everything we saw, they're masters of their craft.
Right. Well, I think the point you're touching on, I mean, it's cultural. That's their culture. You know, if you're going to do something, you're going to do it really well, and you're going to be the best you absolutely can at it. And it requires this. And I was almost going to say insane. I don't think that's fair. It requires a super intense singular focus that I don't think my brain is capable of doing. I get distracted halfway through a joke I'm telling. So I can only imagine what it's like to have to just focus on rice for 10 years in the hopes to be on the line where you can actually prep the fish to actually make the sushi. I mean,
the difference there is they're good at making rice. You're not good at telling jokes.
I knew, Jesus, thank you. I left the door wide open for him. Yeah. We chef, we. but I think to me, that's fascinating. And I can see why you're so enamored by it. You know, when I think you get to go on a trip like that, and I would strongly urge anybody listening to this, if you can have an experience like that, maybe it's Japan, maybe go to France, maybe it's Italy, somewhere else, absorb another culture. And the best way to learn about a culture is through their food and drink, my opinion. You learn a lot. Everybody's going to be breaking bread, and that's an overused term, but to basically simplify it, the worst thing that'll happen to you is you sit down and you eat and drink really good food and really good drinks, be it wine, sake, beer, but it changes you in a very, very good way. If you're hesitant to do it, don't be. You'll thank yourself later, because I, like you, Leon, when I had my first real experience traveling, it changed me for the better. And I just saw things differently, and I understood things differently. And the best and the worst part is I realized I knew nothing. The more I learned, the more I realized I didn't know that much at all. And I think, to me, it's fascinating because it drives you that way.
But it really does. But that's one thing I love when you go to these different places, because I was in the Navy for 10 years and I was stationed in Italy for 6 years. But you know, going to these places, I don't care what I like. I like immersing myself in their culture. Like, I want to know what you eat from the very beginning, when you wake up, to when you go to bed at night, and
right,
all the snacks in between.
And right. I don't, yeah.
It used to frustrate me, because, you know, not to be rude to other people, but they'd be like, oh, where's the McDonald's? Or I'm like, I used to be like, oh my God, like, what? You can get that? Like, you don't need that, first of all. But you're in Italy, like, immerse yourself. Like, I don't, you know, like, I put all my likes on hold, because obviously you're never going to get that experience again. But then you might, it's going to grow you. You're going to be.
Well, yeah. Right. I think you hit on a good point. You don't know what you're missing out on. It's that old adage, like, you don't know what you're missing. Try it. If it looks good, I bet it's good.
If you're going there just to eat what you always eat, then why did you even travel?
Why did you leave the house?
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. I'm so glad you brought it up. It's a brilliant point. My wife gets to travel with me quite a bit, and she noticed this quirk, and I can't help it. And I've done it every country I've traveled to. Whenever we stop and get gas, I love running into, like, in Italy, it's the Auto Grill. When I was in the Bahamas, it's whatever, like, little shack had gas. Mexico, wherever I've been, Australia was one of the first things I did. I want to see their junk food, and I want to eat their junk food. I had the craziest experience in Australia. Well, not really as crazy to them, it's normal, but like Heather and I were like it felt like it was their version of Walgreens. I'm looking at all the candy in life. They had musk flavored lifesavers, musk, and they're really popular, and it tasted exactly like it sounds, like perfume. Potato chips, but everything was salt and vinegar. There were like 20 different versions of salt and vinegar potato chips. And it's those little nuances. Like in Italy, you pick up their candies, totally different. Their chips are totally different. And it's a small part of it, but it's just really cool because it takes you out of your comfort zone and you get to try something new. And really, you're eating potato chips. And then you can take it from there. What do they have for breakfast? What do they have for lunch? What do they have for dinner? And what do they do late night when they've been out drinking too much? Yakitori. How amazing is yakitori?
Okonomiyaki.
Yeah, oh my God, right? Yeah, tell us about that. Let's go into that.
Yeah, I feel like I want to know what that means.
How you like it on the grill. And essentially, it's like their version of pizza, but it's just cabbage. Oh,
frozen. It's like a crepe or a pancake, right?
Yeah. It's like cabbage with an eggy flour batter.
Yep.
And then you put whatever you want on it. And there's a special brown sauce, kewpie mayonnaise, furikake. It's just amazing, but you get that late night, and they make it right in front of you. And then there's a grill right in front.
Right under your chin,
like,
right?
Instead of a plate, like you have your own little plancha, like a personal size plancha. So they take it off their plancha and they put on your plancha and you just eat it. And it's so amazing. And again, I just ate so much. I don't know how I'm not 3,000 pounds, but but that's another thing. Like the sushi, it was so fresh. And, for the first 6 days, I think it was just sushi, raw fish. It was just everything so light. And we're eating like multiple courses. I'm talking about like 10, 14 course meals. And I never felt gross or I never felt too full. I know it sounds crazy saying 14 courses, but I never felt that weird feeling. But then like the chefs, we were talking like maybe day seven. And I didn't want to be that person, but I was jonesing for like a burger. And I,
it happens. Yeah, it happens. There's no shame in that.
But then they took us to, we got some like fried pork and it was just delicious. But then instantly like that meal was tiny, but I felt gross. I felt satisfied. But then I felt like, oh my God, I felt like almost sick. But then Fred, to talk about the junk food, we went to 7-Eleven at night because I had to kind of like emulate Anthony Bourdain. We went to 7-Eleven and we ate an egg salad sandwich.
Like out of their crazy vending machines, right?
It was so good. Again, this is
the best. Oh, come on. Was it good?
Oh, it was. Really? I'm not joking, Fred. I swear to God. There was
the
egg salad sandwich. You have to go to Japan.
Go to Japan for the egg sandwiches. Out of the vending machine.
I know, right? Pro tip, Leon says you travel to Japan for the egg salad sandwich from the vending machine.
I might have had a little bit of coffee, but I remember it being really good.
That's to me, that's part of the travel. I know we're a little off base because we're talking about sushi, but to me, that's the whole experience of travel. That could be Japan, or if you go, you go to France, like you go around Lyon, it's going to be a very different experience from Paris. And just go someplace you like and do it and get immersed. Even if it's 3 days, it changes everything. It's fun. You have stories for the rest of your life, like we're doing right now. I think it's incredible. But I know we kind of got off of sushi, but can you do us a favor and explain the difference between sushi and sashimi for folks? Because I think a lot of people do get confused on that.
Well, sushi has the rice. Again, the rice is the key. Again, I learned that when I was there, but the rice has to be, they just do it in the perfect way. They obsess about the rice. But sushi, yes, does have the rice with the fish. And sashimi is just raw fish. So that's what I did to eat with my soshu tonight. I did a salmon sashimi with cucumber water. I had yuzu, which is a really vibrant Japanese citrus. They use sodachi a lot, and that was delicious. It's a lime version. Mm-hmm. Kind of like yuzu, it's delicious, but you have it fresh too, and that's just, it's just off the charts. It's so good. But the rice, really, again, that was the big eye-opening moment. I thought for sure it was just going to be the amazing fish, but the rice was the key, but you can really tell the difference.
So the sashimi is just the sliced raw fish.
Yeah,
correct.
Sushi is the sort of the fish laid over the top of the rice, and then the rolls are a whole different thing, right? But it's still with the rice. But so, I think when people think sushi, I think a lot of times they think the sushi roll, like the spicy tuna roll and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, here in the States, I would agree. Yeah.
But you can, I think some they classify just they kind of group everything together. So I mean, I'm not saying they're wrong, because they know in their mind what they want. They're kind of just saying,
yeah, I would agree. They're just saying sushi because they're using it like an umbrella.
Yeah, exactly. Like we say steak, we don't always say what kind of steak we want, or the cut.
Yeah, good point. Yeah,
Fred, let's go get the Monaco's. Well, maybe I
yeah, do. Yeah, let's go get hanger steak. Nobody ever says that. Yeah, yeah,
right. Maybe you can walk us through real quick exactly how you made your dish. We're gonna show your dish on Instagram for sure, because it looks
it's absolutely stunning. Yeah.
But maybe just walk us through, a quick glimpse into exactly how you made it, the process, where it started and where it ended, and we'll have the where it ended picture. You sent a couple of pictures of where it started too, so we'll share all of those on our Instagram as well.
Oh, nice. This is another thing I learned, how to treat the fish when you're doing sashimi. Even the fish for sushi, they would butcher the fish, obviously fresh. You get it prepared and then you put it in between kombu, which is the seaweed, and that's something I never did before. And then they do a super hard chill on it, and
so you like sandwich it almost, right? You like, you have the seaweed and you put the fish in between and you sandwich it and you put it in the refrigerator?
Yeah, you put it in the refrigerator, but they simmer to like a pizza dough that you would, want the sugar to eat the yeast and blah, blah, blah overnight. The same thing, like the fish they're butchering and putting in the kombu is always for the next day.
Okay, interesting.
Like super fresh, but then the kombu goes into the fish. It's just so, so amazing. So that's what I did. I had a sandwich, and then I just made with the Vitamix. Justin did a cucumbers, preserved lemon, a little white balsamic. I just spun it, and then I just strained it through a tammy, the thing we used to use for the gnocchi.
Right.
I just wanted that vibrant water, and then just some shaved radish, some cucumber, and then I had some wakame and furikake, and it just all came together kind of quickly.
Well, it looked like it took forever. Like
doesn't sound beautiful. Quickly either.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, since we have two chefs on here, I think probably above any other, and you can both correct me if I'm wrong and put me back in my place, but above any other, I would say cuisine, for lack of a better term, your knife skills are the most important thing when it comes to actually preparing the fish, when it comes to sushi. Again, using that as a very broad term for sushi, I think that's as important as the rice and the fish itself, if I'm correct.
Oh, no, absolutely. And they have special, they have special knives to cut the fish. And yeah, and again, you don't touch... just like in America, you don't touch that guy's knife, but no, they're like,
I let you touch my knife. Don't make it look that bad. I let you touch my knife if you wanted to.
I don't know why, but that sounds dirty when you say that. Let's move on.
It was very sharp, Justin.
All right. I that's shame on me. I did that one.
No, but they even took us to the knife capital of the world there in Japan. And we saw that whole process. That was amazing. Because Fred, you're right. Like, to cut the fish is important. So they wanted to show us how the knives were made. And again, that ties back to, masters of the craft, because in the knife process, each man had only one job with the knife. So it was so amazing where, if you started the knife, like pounding it and getting it hot, like you passed it to the next guy for that next step, whatever it may be. So like one guy doesn't make the entire knife. It took eight guys, and then they're independent contractors too. So it's so crazy. Like they don't just work for like a giant knife company. Like they're their own guy. And basically they could do eight knives a day, but we got to see that process and I have, where's my knife?
You have one?
Yeah, I do.
But, and you take care of a knife like that, it's going to last forever, Yeah. And they're worth every penny.
Oh no, absolutely. Oh no. Yeah. It's amazing. And we got to see the entire process.
For the folks that can't see this, it looks like Leon's gone into a warehouse and it's just full of, no, I'm kidding. He's sifting through drawers. Oh, wow. That's gorgeous. We need a picture of that so we can put that up. Please take a
Leon,
picture.
Send us a picture of that. We'll share it on
Look at that.
Culinary Road on Instagram.
Can I point something out, Chef? I thought you would do it. Not that I'm throwing you under the bus, but I'm throwing you under the bus. We talked about rice. Sake is made from rice. The sushi made with rice. You got a bridging technique right there, if I'm correct.
Yeah, no, that's why
Well, we're bridging. Maybe it's not a technique, but we're bridging, right?
No, but that's why I
you guys should be clapping. That was amazing on my part. You're welcome. Thank you.
Fred, go fuck yourself.
That's I had a little bit of sake. Sorry. That was, it's all really fascinating. I mean, that kind of dedication and focus. Every culture has something different to offer. You know, I traveled to Italy quite a bit. You know, I think they probably are maybe some of the best at hospitality and making something simple, beautiful. And that could be food. It could be a pair of shoes. It's just the experience I've had. Even like a simple espresso is elevated to kind of new heights. Japan, clearly, it's like all about the focus and the passion, and you're going to be the best at whatever your job is. And it's kind of incredible. You know, we're here in this country, I feel like, and it's not a bad thing. We're all kind of like, we're a bunch of different hats and we're really great at multitasking, but that doesn't always make you the best at what you do. And maybe jack of all trades, good at a lot of things, maybe master of none, but you know, they all bring something to the table. It's just fascinating to hear that. I'm hoping to go one day. I've never been. I'm really hoping to go.
You should definitely go, because I could set you up with the connections. And
I will take you up on that.
Great.
Well, that's a good segue into talking about mastering your craft, going into the 5-star ribs. So, Leon, you got
this? Oh, yeah. Let's hear about that.
Yeah, 5-star ribs out of Sandwich, Mass. What do you got going on there? Because I think I haven't had them yet, because I haven't been in Massachusetts in a little while, but knowing you, you're trying to hone in and really perfect what you're doing. So what is 5-star ribs? Where can you get it? And give us a little background on it.
Oh, yeah. 5-star ribs. Great. It's, you know, like being a chef, like you're constantly learning and you never want to be stagnant. And that's why smoking is a certain technique. You know, like I've smoked before, you know, like in my 23 years of cooking.
Smoking food, we're talking about. Smoking food, right?
Smoking food.
Yes. Okay, good. Just want to make sure.
Yes. Smoking food. So, but you know, like I never obsessed about it and the aerodynamics and the wood choice and everything that goes into it. So I was at my kid's soccer game. Long story short, they're like, hey, this guy's smoking wings down at this local shop on the Cape. So I went down and ended up talking to him for 2 hours. He was in the Navy as well. You know, I guess I can talk.
But that's such a Leon story. Like, I went down about for wings and I talked to the guy for 2 hours.
But yeah, so then it was funny. He called me next day. He's like, I start smoking food, like, you know, because I want to teach you and I wanted to learn. So I said, this isn't my wheelhouse, but, you know, he's from Texas. He's been smoking for over 20 years and he's a true pit master and I wanted to learn. So he said, I'm willing to teach you. So it's great because this is I've been doing it now, I don't know, for a year and a half, if not a little bit more. And it's great. It's at a Sandwich, Mass. It's a food truck. We go to different breweries, but COVID hit and we've just been kind of taking orders. But now that things are smoothing out, we should be, you know, able to go back to wherever, different breweries, but we're on Facebook and can follow us. We find out where we are, but yeah, but I always want to get better and, you know, like mastering the craft, you know, coming back from Japan. I'm like, okay, what's next? Learning, really obsessed.
Constant quest to nourish your education, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's not just set it and forget it. Like some people say, oh, just, you know, put the brisket on and you'll walk away for, you know, 18 hours. Yeah, it's not how it works. There's, you know, aerodynamics, just like a regular grill, Justin. There's your hot spots on your smoker. You have to know so much. And again, the wood choice, it's just everything that goes onto it. And you just have to obsess with it. Or else, you know, if you want good barbecue, you have to obsess. If you want crappy barbecue, I guess you can set it and forget it.
Throw in a crock pot.
yeah. But learning everything, because it's just, again, I mentioned brisket, but it's, you know, pork butts, the ribs, they all have their different nuances and you have to learn so much. So it's very,
yeah. And you learn from a Texan, and that's, you know, it's smoking and barbecue is not something they do. That's a religion. It's a totally different thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's, I think it's much harder to find really great barbecue than people want to admit. And I would argue that's probably this country's best gift to the world of food is our barbecue, because it's so varied, it's so regional, and it's so specific. And when it's done right, it's so, so good. I mean, I know it's sort of, it's like braising tough cuts of meat. It's sort of peasant food, but my God, when you have really good short ribs or even the Texas style beef ribs, they like, man, if you can't tell, I love barbecue. Yeah. It's incredible when it's done, but I would say that's probably the best American cuisine we can offer the world. And people might look at me sideways when I say that, but I feel like it is. It's about as indigenous to this country as any dish I can think of. And nobody say mac and cheese. Yes, I love mac and cheese, but come on.
Yeah, no, that's, come on.
Sorry, I got off on a tangent. I'm sorry, Leon, I interrupted. Yeah.
But anyway, so five-star ribs, where can people find you besides on, you know, obviously you're in on Cape Cod, but we'll have to follow you on Instagram. What is the what's the Instagram handle? What do you got going on? How can we
five-star ribs
at five-star ribs? So the number five, STAR ribs, right? Five-star ribs.
That's right. And the same thing on Facebook, five-star okay. ribs. Yeah. And where it's at a sandwich mess. And again, we've been taking orders again because of the COVID thing and doing limited smoking. But again, like we don't know what we're up against. I think things will be going back to normal here. So we'll probably just, obviously we'll always post where we're going to be, but it's just great. Like even for Easter, we did smoked prime ribs and it was amazing. Amazing. Yeah. The Argentina grill too. So after the smoking,
I saw that on your Instagram page. I love that. Where you can raise and lower the level. Yeah, so cool.
Smoking in a couple hours, but depending on how big, you know, people wanted different sizes. So depending on different hours of smoke on the regular smoker, you put it on the Argentina grill, then over post oak, and it just gets that sear. And it's awesome because you can control it, Fred. You
know, yeah, it's such a cool contraption. I don't know how to describe it any other way. I can only imagine how bad I would screw it up. That looks like it takes a lot of technique and know-how. But I want one, and I don't know how to use it.
the post oak is such just a beautiful flavor. It's one flavor I'm not used to, like around here. But the post oak, I did chicken, just regular leg quarters, and just from raw too. So it takes a little bit of maneuvering up and down because you're going from raw, so you definitely can't like burn it. But it takes a little bit longer, but it's worth it because all that post oak gets into that meat and the fat then drips onto the
stop it. Stop. You're making me hungry. By the way, I have a feeling with all the pent up demand, we've all lived through a very difficult year, more and more people getting vaccinated. Where you are is absolutely a summer destination. I suggest you get your rest while you can, stock up on coffee, because you're going to be so busy you can't see straight, brother. Yeah. And I think hopefully the people listening to this will take our advice and definitely check it out. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Absolutely. If you're in the Cape Cod area, check out Five Star Ribs, follow them on Instagram, follow them on Facebook, and make sure you find out what they're doing. And also make sure you drink some sake and eat some sushi. Can't go wrong there either. So.
Yeah.
Now, all those different areas of expertise where you got to keep learning every day. That sums up Leon, just trying to get better every day.
Yeah, being constant students a really good thing. I think that's why we all do what we do, you know. Really, it was really great catching up with you. It's been a while, Leon, but that was fascinating. Thanks for taking the time to come on. That was a joy listening to sake, sushi, knives and such.
Great seeing you both, and I agree. It's great. It's been way too long, but it's great seeing you both, and great catching up. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Cheers.
Thanks again. All right, we're on to the wrap up here. So that was our interview with Leon Bisco. Leon is executive chef at Restaurant Associates, and I guess more importantly, or as important, Five Star Ribs, which is
as important. Yeah.
Yep, which is kind of a little bit of a passion project that he started, but it's a food truck on Cape Cod in Massachusetts. For those listeners that aren't familiar with Massachusetts, the Cape is Cape Cod.
right.
But he's really, you know, starting to learn that craft and understanding what smoking is all about. You know, smoking, as I mentioned, smoking food, meats in this scenario, not necessarily anything else.
Foods and meats, yeah.
You know, that kind of ties into honing the crafts of anything that you're doing. So, you know, we talked about sushi in our interview. We also talked about the barbecue. We talked about sake. But all those things take a great deal of determination and learning and really understanding the craft. And, you know, that those things.
Skill. that goes into all of those things is it's something, talent is a big part of all of that to create something good, but without skill, talent doesn't have anywhere to go. And it was really interesting how he mentioned that the 10 years of learning as an apprentice just to do the rice.
Just to do the rice, exactly. Which actually reminded me, as we were talking to Leon, it reminded me of the documentary called Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Such a good movie.
Yeah, it's unbelievable the amount of effort. So if you've never seen it, it's Jiro Dreams of Sushi, J-I-R-O, Jiro Dreams of Sushi. And I think it might be on Netflix at this time.
It is.
Nowadays, yep. Right?
Well, I checked about 2 weeks ago and it was there because I do a lot of like food shows and it showed up in the, and like,
sure,
you should watch this. Yeah.
Basically, it's this Japanese gentleman. He has a sushi restaurant in a subway in Japan, and he's been working, I think he's in his like late 80s, and he's just been working every single day of his life trying to perfect the craft of making sushi. And you know, we talk about the making of the rice and the cutting of the sushi and the right knife and, you know, how long it takes to be able to be the rice guy, and then learning how to cut, you know, all of those things take a long, long time because the Japanese as a culture are very driven to be perfectionists. And you know, that documentary, I think if you're not familiar with sushi, if you're not familiar with the Japanese culture, which I'm not, admittedly, other than, you know, seeing that documentary and, you know, eating sushi after work at night, having had a few too many sakis and hammering down some spicy tuna rolls. That's about the extent of my Japanese knowledge.
Well, no, I think you're maybe downplaying it a little bit. I think I've always been enamored and fascinated by how, again, cultural, and speaking from a very novice point of view, like how it's so ingrained. And like this, if you're, and I hate to put it like this, if you're an accountant, you're going to be the best accountant you could possibly be. You know, if you're going to be a woodworker, you're going to be the best woodworker you can possibly be. If you're going to be a sushi chef, it's going to take you years and years and years to get there. And you're going to constantly be perfecting what you do. And it's just, it's if you're Japanese, my understanding, or the way I understand it, is it's part of your culture and that's what's expected. And not that there's not love and passion involved, because I don't think you could do something every day for your entire life if you didn't really love it, because you'd go nuts, I think. I know I would.
For sure.
Yeah, no, I think I almost took it down the path where it was robotic, and it's not that. It's not that at all. Yeah.
No, it's not, because it's, and again, I don't want to keep harping on this documentary, but it's finding that, and we talk about this on Culinary Road quite a bit, going on the journey and the venture to find the best fish that you can possibly have. You know, it's not just about being the sushi chef. It's about finding the best fish and finding the best rice and finding the best farmer that's making the best rice. And then having that farmer make the rice the way that you want it to be made, you know, the way that you want it to be grown. And, you know, we talked in the interview with Leon about the ducks going up and down the rows of the rice.
Yeah, they release the ducklings out into the rice fields because they help control the pests, because they eat the bugs. They help aerate or stir up the sediment around, because rice grows in shallow pools of water. It helps aerate, and it's really good for the growth and the health of the rice itself, and it changes it. But it's also a very old practice, and it was really kind of cool. And not everybody does that. That's going to be certain places, certain farmers that do that. And you got to think, if there's that much attention to detail, the rice is probably going to be really good. It was fascinating.
Yeah, that amazing. That attention to detail is definitely not lost with the Japanese culture. And, you know, Leon, he was my sous chef for a little while, as we talked about earlier, and we worked together. He was a line cook when I was a sous chef. And then when I took over at Tommaso, he left and then came back and became my sous chef again. But he's always had a passion for learning, and he was always just trying to, he's a very humble guy. He'll tell you he doesn't know something, you know, which I think a lot of people have that barrier.
They don't know something, right?
Yeah. They don't want to admit it.
Yeah.
So, and Leon's never been that kind of guy. He'll tell you, I don't know. I don't know what that is. Teach me what it is. And that's that traveling culture that I think is lost a lot on people who get to go abroad, because you should want to learn everything you possibly can. And yeah, sometimes it's a little harder. You get out of your comfort zone, and you know, you don't want to ask. You want to pretend you know more than you do. And I'm
nobody wants that for sure. Yeah, nobody wants to fill out a place or like they're not intelligent. And I think once you're able to let go of that, there's no way you know everything. And like I said earlier, the more I learn about food and wine, the more I realize I don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing. And it's not like I'm a really great human being by saying that, but that to me, that's actually what I like best about traveling and working with professionals like yourself or like Leon and getting a chance to have these conversations. There's just a different perspective you get. And when you let go of some of those things, and I don't want to call it a hang up because nobody wants to feel like they're unintelligent or not part of the conversation, but the second you learn, it stays with you. And kind of giving into that, it's not easy. I get it. We all have egos. I know I do. I know a lot of chefs, excuse me, do.
What, me?
I'm sorry. It was something stuck in my throat, but it's not an easy thing to do, but admitting you don't know gives you a chance to find the answer.
Right.
At the risk of sounding too philosophical, but that's, I think, one of his best qualities.
Absolutely. Which actually got him.
He's going to tell you doesn't. So tell me, what is it?
Which actually got him to found the, five-star ribs food truck that he has on Cape Cod in Sandwich, where it's based in Sandwich, but it's all over the Cape.
Yeah,
you know, definitely make sure you follow that. It's at five-star ribs on Instagram and on
Facebook, Face Space. I think it's pronounced, it's spelled Face Space, but pronounced Facebook.
Facebook, right. That's it. That's the one. Going back to the old Bill Belichick days, right? But make sure you're following Leon on there. He posts some great pictures. I'm sure he's going to be posting the sushi that he made.
Oh my God, it was so beautiful. He sent us photos right before we hopped on the call together, and it's beautiful. He owes us that photo. I'm going to steal it from my phone if he doesn't send us a different one. So
yeah, absolutely. But as always, make sure you are following us. Instagram at FMIV is Fred's Instagram handle. Yep. I am at Chef Melnick, and then follow us together at culinary.rd at Culinary Road. You know, make sure you're interacting with us on there. You know, it's fun to kind of get some banter back and forth, commenting and, you know, letting us know what you think when we have cool guests, which we always have cool guests. I mean, all our guests are way cooler than we are. That's for sure.
We do okay.
I can pretend like I'm a cool guy, right? But if you want to check out some cool wine videos, go on YouTube. Check out Fred at Until Next Wine with Fred Mullins on YouTube. Subscribe on there. Fred definitely has some fun videos and some cool things to go on there. But as always, we are on anchor.fm/culinaryrd, and if you go on there, send us a message. Voicemail, you
can tell us how great we're doing.
Yeah, click on the tab and it'll send us it'll directly send us whatever your voicemail is, and we can, you know, add other segments. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about. We definitely want to hear from you. We want to make sure that we're interacting and getting the best that we possibly can out of the Culinary Road podcast. So make sure you are following us. You know, you can listen, obviously you're listening, if you're listening now, you're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Anchor or any of those. But make sure when you go on there, you're rating, subscribing, following, all of those things. Those all help us along. They make this podcast continue to roll.
Yeah, we want to keep doing this, folks. The more people that listen and subscribe, the better. Share it. Yeah, again, if you want to leave us feedback, that'd be great. We think we're on a really good path. But if you have a unique point of view, something you'd love to hear us talk about that we haven't talked about, we're all ears and we'd love to hear from you. Maybe we even do a viewer's best one day. Who knows?
Yes,
viewers, listeners. Sorry.
All right. Well, I guess that's it. Unless Fred, you have anything else you want to add?
No, I've talked enough during this episode, I think.
Yes, I agree.
I would agree.
All right. Well, until next time, you'll hear from us again on Tuesday.
Yep. See you then, Chef.
All right. Cheers.